So I've been up since four. I
I can tell. No
tired.
offense at all.
No, yeah, no,
But I
yeah,
can
no.
tell.
Not only that, but I've done my podcast. I've made a little Instagram thingy for it.
Fancy.
I listened to our other podcast that we're putting up next week, and I did my physical therapy exercises. I went to the gym. I did all of these things. And so after this, I'm gonna go take a nap because I'm tired. And
The gym was a bold choice.
hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Blair.
And I'm Kirsten, and we are Mediocre
Mediocre
Content.
Content.
And I am super excited about this episode. I can't even lie.
It's going to be a whale of a time.
She said it. She said it.
I did. I did. Will we be teaching you how to speak whale? The answer is no. Only Ellen DeGeneres as Dory can do that.
These are the rules.
Those are the rules. I don't make them. I just
It's
abide
true.
by them.
Yes, these are
In any
facts.
functioning society, you have to have rules, and that's one of them. So
I wish I could speak whale. That would be cool.
I feel like that's too much power.
You think it's too much power?
I
What
think,
would you
yeah,
do
because
with
like
it?
if you could communicate with all the whales, Jinx, I swear.
He's also having a whale of a time.
He really is. He's like rubbing his head up against my microphone.
As
So
usual.
if I, sporadically
Cut out.
cut out, that's why. Hi, I know you want to just like butt your head against everything. That's nice, but I need you to calm down.
Gotta get his mouth on it.
He just likes to hit his head against stuff. I don't know what to
It's
tell
not even
you.
stream time.
It might even be brain damage. Who knows?
Oof, drain damage.
Sometimes, no, but sometimes he like hits his head against a wall just like randomly, and I hear it and it hurts.
Ouch.
It sounds like it hurts really bad. I'm like, what are you doing, man? What are you doing?
That reminds me when we lived in Florida, we had like laminate floors, and Lynx has super fluffy feet. And he would try to run around the house, and he would like Tokyo drift around the corner and hit like the doorway, like the door frame. And I'm like,
They do that. They
oh,
do that. They get the zoomies and then
wipe
sit. I'm just like,
out. There's zero traction.
yeah,
Oh my gosh.
it's the
Oh,
best.
it really is. I feel so
It really
terrible, but
is.
they're having a blast.
Yeah.
So, what are you gonna do?
Yeah. Gotta be in their bonnet, you know?
They
Gotta
do.
do it. All right. What were we talking about before that?
Whales.
Whales. So, yes, we will be speaking of whales. And I'm excited because I think whales are like one of the most fascinating parts of the sea that we know of so far. So basically, I'm just going to disclaim and then I'll let you do the good news and then we'll get on to the whales.
Woo.
So obviously, we're not experts on anything. We're definitely not experts on whales. I did go see whales in a
Yeah.
whale watching expedition.
So
But
fun.
that does not make me an expert, believe it or not.
Weird.
But if you want to hear about whales, and if you have anything to contribute to the conversation about whales, please continue listening. But just know that we don't know everything about whales. Slash, we would be here for like 3 hours,
Oh my
as
gosh.
per usual.
I
So.
was, yeah, if we didn't skim through a lot of this stuff, we would literally have weeks worth of episodes.
Yeah, I had to cut down the evolution stuff, and y'all are going to be like, "Oh my God, this is taking forever. Why is she still talking about evolution?" The answer is because this is the short version.
This is abbreviated even.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So,
that makes sense.
anyway, go for it.
Okay,
What's
so
good?
I'm also going to be talking a little bit about species, which is exciting, but these are land species and it's a new one, which is super exciting. So, in India's remote western Ghats, a gorgeous blue and yellow gecko species has been named in honor of Vincent van Gogh, super cool, whose painting Starry Night was the first thing that entered Ishan Agarwal's mind when he saw it. found during one of the many expeditions into these underdeveloped and underexplored mountains running parallel to India's western coastline, it enriches both the eyes and the scientific literature. These articles are always so, like, aggressively
floofy.
Yeah. Belonging to the genus Nemapsis, that's what I'm going to go with. Mm-hmm. It is one of the 2,300 members worldwide and over 100 in India alone. Not so long ago, though, there were only a few dozen. This species was found during one such exploration after the flash of indigo and mustard yellow, which caught a Garhwal's eye. It looked similar to another gecko of the same genus, which was C. galaxia. However, during the lab work, he was suspicious that it might be a completely new species, and it sounds like it was. It and a second closely related species are described for the first time in a study that was published in the Natural Zoo Keys, found in the, oh my goodness, this is a really aggressive word, I apologize, I'm going to butcher the crap out of it, but found in the Shrivilipithar Meghamalai Tiger Reserve.
You did great. You did the best.
Yes, I did. Okay.
There are a lot of consonants there.
A lot. But Agarwal suspects that this gecko is receiving much greater protection than many of India's native reptiles because of its location under this kind of umbrella of the tiger region. Umbrella conservation strategies allow naturalists to advocate for the conservation of a single species whose needs of territory, prey species, and protection are largest, and ipso facto helps conserve dozens or even hundreds of other species that share that territory. Don't ask what that means. I don't know.
Okay.
In this case, protecting tigers means also protecting the geckos, is what you need to know. And he says that these new techniques for studying DNA will also allow much greater specificity in describing species, and that this particular genus is extremely diverse. So super cool to have an entirely new species of anything at this rate.
Truly.
And even cooler that it's kind of protected because of tigers, of all things. Super cool.
Neat.
Different. Okay, so the next is space news, because why not?
Space.
Space. The ocean is kind of like our space. You know, on the planet, I would say.
Right. So then the conspiracy theory holds true, mm-hmm. that they found something underneath the water.
Yes.
And they were like, nope. And then they were like, we need to get off this planet ASAP.
Somehow space was safer.
Yeah.
So weird. Anyway.
Even though we can't breathe. So like.
In either location. Yeah.
That is true. You're right.
Yeah, my gills have since gone away. It's been a couple millennia, I think. Anyway.
No, actually, you had gills when you were being born.
I did. That's fair. So it was like 30 years ago. You know, I didn't really need my gills after a while. Well, I could get rid of these. I don't need them. Anyway. So space. A spacecraft is being built that could orbit the Earth and aid other ships that need a refuel, which will extend their missions. The Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, Texas, will build and test a small demonstration spacecraft as part of a $25.5 million space mobility and logistics project, which is funded by the U.S. Space Force, #SpaceForce. Shout out to Space Force. Live long and prosper, babes. Led by prime contractor Astroscale, which is a really cool name, the spacecraft called the Astroscale Prototype Servicer for Refueling, which is thankfully abbreviated as APSR, will carry Hydrazine propellant from a depot, also in orbit, to spacecrafts who are running low on fuel. So it's a space gas station.
Cute.
Very modern. This will be scheduled to launch.
Does it have snacks? It should have snacks.
You got any Diet Cokes in there?
Right.
I know. I gotta have snacks for the space trip. I was gonna say road trip, but there's literally zero roads there.
Gotta have snacks for the air.
For the air trip.
Or for the lack there. For the vacuum.
For the vacuum. Vacuum snacks. Oh my goodness. That would be an amazing. Somebody make that happen, please.
Right. Right.
Can you imagine just like orbiting around the Earth and all of a sudden there's just like this cashier just floating? Is that all you need? Oh, yeah, one icy, please.
That's right.
Where was I? Anyway, scheduled to be launch ready by 2026, the Apps R can service any spacecraft fitted with a compatible refueling port. Quote, running low on fuel is a common issue for spacecraft in Earth orbit. When they have extended all their fuel, their mission ends, even though the vehicle may be in otherwise excellent health. And that was a quote by staff engineer Steve Thompson. By having this refueling vehicle, it will not only extend their missions, they can also get additional lifetime out of the spacecraft that's already in orbit. So it's not going through like ascent and descent through the atmosphere, even though they're obviously made to do that, but it does
And
create wear and tear.
that takes a lot of energy
It
too,
does.
and
It does. So you're already out there. If we can make it easier to stay out there and complete the mission, that's the best move. So the Apps R will operate in geostationary orbit around the Earth, meaning it will follow a circular orbit in sync with the Earth's rotational period of 24 hours. And over the next 16 months, it will construct the host vehicle, which will be pretty small apparently, in the Institute's new processing facility. The maximum dimensions are 24 by 28 by 45 inches when stowed for launch, and the total vehicle launch mass will weigh just at around 437 pounds, including the propellant. And when the host spacecraft is complete, they will integrate the Astroscale supplied payload and, of course, perform system-level environmental testing to prepare for actual launch. So lots to do. But this is great news because we're still obviously exploring space, but it's really difficult, like I said, for wear and tear of materials, but also like longevity of the actual mission, to have to, keep coming back and forth. So this will be great. It might even be able to extend the range at which these crafts can go. So good news for exploration in space.
I like it.
Yeah, and now I suppose we'll be talking about a different level of space.
We're going to be talking about a creature that lives in the ocean. We're not talking about space.
Space
It's not,
ocean.
no. No.
Have you ever seen those like the constellations that like have the whale or
Yes,
whatever
I
picture?
have.
It's so stinking cute.
It is
Anyway.
cute. It is. Okay, so we're going to be talking about whales, which are part of what are called cetaceans. Is that how you would pronounce that? Okay, C-E TACEANS, which includes the whales, dolphins, and porpoises, which
Porpoises.
are so cute.
They
We
are
love a
cute.
good porpoise.
What porpoise do they serve? Sorry.
I'm done with you, ma'am.
That's fair. I'll mute myself. It's fine.
Okay, so common names would include whales, cetacea. Is the scientific name. They are of the diet carnivorous, believe it or not. And lifespan, which I think is funny, is unknown.
They just live forever. They're like tortoises.
Right. And I think, there's a variety of reasons we don't know. I mean, a lot I don't think that goes for all species, but I'm pretty
Right.
sure, like for the larger ones, they go pretty deep, so we don't always know like where they're at. They can be as little as 9 feet up to 98 feet long, which is a lot. And then they can weigh
Marginally.
the smallest is 500 pounds to 200 tons. Yeah.
That's a lot. That kind of makes it made me have like a little shiver down my spine.
Needless to say, whales are the largest animals on Earth. They live in every ocean that we have. The massive mammals range from 600-pound dwarf sperm whales to the colossal blue whale, which is what everyone thinks of when I think people would probably think of two different types, probably the blue whale, which is like the biggest one, or the humpback whale, which is the one that
Humpback
goes,
whales.
that like goes out of the water. and does the fun little breach situation.
It is fun.
Yeah, I've seen it in real life before. It
We're so
is
fancy.
wild.
I bet it is.
And so the blue whale can weigh up to 200 tons and stretch up to 100 feet long, which for reference is as long as a professional basketball court. Yeah.
A little unsettling.
But it's fine because Caitlin Clark can still make the shot. It'll be okay for her.
Just throw that in there. It's okay because she has girl power.
She does. I literally knew nothing about basketball at all until this women's college season, and I
Think
learned
that's a
about
fair start.
I'm down.
I think we
Like,
need to do like women's sports at some point.
we do. We
Yeah,
do.
like the National Women's Hockey League, need to do that. Women's basketball, need to do that. Softball, oh my gracious, we need to do that. Anyway, I digress.
All right. Yes. Well, we'll get there.
We
We'll get
will.
there. Not us coming up with other podcasts while we're doing the
This
podcast.
happens all the time now.
This happens every year. No.
Every year. I love it.
No, but I was listening to a previous recording of a different podcast, and we did mention some, and I put them on the sheet. So now, because we like forget that
We
we mentioned
do.
it.
No, that's fair.
So
Which ones
the
did we
Hello
talk?
Kitty one will be
Oh,
now on
yes.
there. So that'll be
Nice.
good.
That's a great one.
All right, Kirsten. So we're going to talk about briefly, we're going to talk about whale calls.
Oh, I'm so I'm so
So,
ready.
humpback whales are the ones that make the most noise. Okay. Well,
Have you
they
talked to them
so
personally about
they're the
this?
ones that you can like hear from the surface, I should say.
Okay.
So, they produce, quote, otherworldly vocalizations that can be heard for miles underwater. The song's complex combinations of moans, howls, and cries that can continue for hours are produced when whales push air around in their heads.
Me after Mexican night. Just a lot of moans, howls, and cries. I'm basically a whale.
You're basically a shark in a cute way.
Well, mine is also amplified. I'm sure you can hear it statewide.
Oh, God. Oh, okay, so they push the air around and they amplify the sound through a blob of fat that perches on the top of their jaw,
So
which
rude.
is wild.
It is wild.
It's thought that whales communicate through the calls, which researchers believe can be heard for thousands of miles. Now, this is not the only whale that makes noises and vocalizes. Beluga whales are also known for being particularly chatty.
And cute.
And then, but I'm not, that's your whale call situation. But the ones that Dory was referencing in Finding Nemo, that's the movie,
Got it.
were humpback whale calls, and they were almost consumed by a humpback whale, so it makes very good sense.
Makes very good sense.
Yeah. So anyway, threats to the whale population, stark declines from hunting have largely stopped, but we do have a lot of traffic in the oceans, believe it or not. So things like ships and propellers on ships and net entanglements can be a problem. Sonar has been developed to like help avoid this, obviously. But it's not a perfect system. And sometimes the whales get curious. I don't know.
Doesn't so didn't tell me if I made this up. Didn't they say that sonar may also like create problems with their communication as well?
I don't know. I didn't find anything in this particular research session about it. But I don't know anything about that, to be honest.
Interesting. Yeah. I'd be interested to know.
Yeah, but I mean, I would rather use sonar
Oh, yeah.
to like
If we can prevent
avoid
like running
killing
into
the
a
whale,
whale.
as opposed to like, it's fine if you can't talk to your girl, like, we'll move, it's
Oh my
fine. You know what I
God.
mean?
You are being so dramatic.
Right.
Oh my God. That's
Okay, so
great.
now we're going to talk about the evolution of whales, and it's going to be interesting. So believe
Okay.
it or not, whales used to walk on land. Everybody take a moment and breathe that
This
in.
really makes me upset. Get off
Yeah.
my
So,
land.
because whales are mammals, logically, they
Right.
had to be on land at some point.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
About 375 million years ago, the first tetrapods, which are, for those who don't know, vertebrates with arms and legs, pushed themselves out of the swamps and began to live on land. So, if you were in AP biology in the years of 2010 to 2012, you might have read the book Your Inner Fish, where they illustrate this very, very, very vividly about
With
how,
extreme
with
detail.
extreme detail, the whole book is about it, where they talk about the transition from like things that live in the water to things that live on land. Okay. It's actually a really good book. It's very well written. It kept my mind occupied as an 18-year-old, which,
Perfect.
difficult to do.
Agreed.
All right. this major evolutionary transition set the stage for all subsequent groups of land-dwelling vertebrates, including a diverse lineage called synapsids, which originated about 306 million years ago. Though these creatures, such as the Dimetrodon, looked like reptiles, they were actually the archaic precursors of mammals. So, and they look really weird, like the pictures that were in this article. So think about a kimono dragon, like the ones that fall from the trees in Florida.
Iguanas.
Iguanas, sorry.
I mean,
Sorry.
if a Komodo dragon fell on my head in Florida, I would be just as scared. I'm going to be very honest
So no,
with you.
think about the big iguanas that are
Yeah.
in Florida. I don't like reptiles. Anyway, they
I
think about one of those and how they looked, but also fluffy.
A
Okay.
fluffy iguana?
Yeah, with
Fancy.
like furs.
Oh my, oh, she is draped in furs,
Fur, yeah.
draped in a leopard beak. That'd be perfect.
So anyway, think yeah, anyway. By the time the first mammals evolved 200 million years ago, however, dinosaurs were the dominant vertebrates, obviously. Jurassic Park. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
mammals diversified in the shadow of a great archosaurs, and they remained fairly small and secretive until the non-avian dinosaurs were wiped out by a mass extinction 65 million years ago. This global catastrophe cleared the way for a major radiation of mammals. It was only about 10 million years after this extinction, and more than 250 million years since the earliest tetrapods crawled out onto land, that the first whales evolved. These earliest cetaceans were not like the whales that we know and love today, and only recently have paleontologists been able to recognize them. So it took us, and you'll be shocked, it took us a hell of a long time to like just to figure out the timeline from whales being on land to back in the water. So for more than a century, our knowledge of whale fossil record was so sparse that we did not know what whale ancestors looked like. Now the tide has turned. The turns have tabled.
The turns have tabled. Yes.
In the space of just 3 decades, a flood of new fossils have filled in the gaps in our knowledge. To turn the origin of whales into one of the best documented examples of large-scale evolutionary change in the fossil record. These ancestral creatures were stranger than anyone ever expected. There was no straight line march of terrestrial mammals leading up to fully aquatic whales, but and evolutionary riot of amphibious cetaceans that walked and swarm along rivers, estuaries, and coasts of the prehistoric Asia. As strange as modern whales are, sorry guys, jinx is in the way.
Cat impeding.
Their fossil predecessors were even stranger. So, pioneers who cleared land in Alabama and Arkansas frequently found enormous round bones and didn't tell anyone. Some settlers used them as fireplace hearths. Others propped them up with propped up fences with the bones, or used them as cornerstones.
Why are humans so weird? I'm just gonna put this carcass pillows. Next to the fireplace.
Yeah. I know. The bones are so numerous that in some fields they were destroyed because they interfered with cultivating land.
Humans.
We're dumb. In 1832, a hill collapsed. Weird way of saying landslide.
True. Yeah.
The hill collapsed on the Arkansas property of Judge H. Bry and exposed a long sequence of 28 circular bones. He thought that they might be of scientific interest and sent a package to the American Philosophical Society in Philadelphia. No one quite knew what to make of them. Some of the sediment attached to the bone contained small shells and showed that a large creature that had once lived in an ancient sea, but little more could be said with any certainty.
Highly recommend people look up, like, where these ancient oceans were and how they receded and things like that, because even in like the American Midwest, that's where they think a lot of like the Grand Canyon and stuff like that, kind of the mountains and things were formed, because there's erosion is really what it amounted to. Anyway, fun
you're
facts.
So right. No, you're so right. Bry's donation was soon matched and exceeded by that of Judge John Cray from Alabama. He found vertebrae and other fragments while, you know, blowing up his property.
So random.
And also sent off a few samples to the Philadelphia Society. Richard Harland reviewed the fossils, which were unlike any he had seen before. He asked for more bones, and Cray soon sent parts of the skull, jaw, limbs, ribs, and backbone to the of the enigmatic creature. Given that both Cray and Bry said that they had seen intact vertebral columns in excess of 100 feet in length, the living creature must have been one of the largest vertebrates to have ever lived. Furthermore, Harlan thought that the bones were most similar to those of extinct marine reptiles, such as the long-necked plesiosaurus and streamlined Ichthyosaurus. He tentatively assigned it the name of Basilosaurus. He wasn't certain, though. The jaw contained teeth that were a different size and shape. So it didn't match. We weren't matching. We didn't know what this was. We're working on it. We're trying to figure it out.
We're working on it.
Harlan traveled to London in 1839, to present the Basilosaurus to some of the leading paleontologists and anatomists of the day. Richard Owen, a rising star in the academic community, carefully scrutinized every bone, and he even received permission to slice into the teeth to study the microscopic structure. His attention to such tiny details often ultimately settled the identification of the sea monster, because obviously they thought it was a sea monster at this point.
What else could it be? It's a Leopleurodon. Loch Ness monster.
It's a
Leopleurodon, Charlie.
Oh God!
What a throwback.
We just dated ourselves.
I'm a nice date. I wouldn't mind taking me on a date or two.
Carl, you can't kill people.
I did not know that. Hands, I'm hungry for hands.
My tummy has the rumblies that only hands can satisfy. Why do we know this still?
It's disgusting.
It's wild.
Anyway.
Okay, so long and short of it, Charles Darwin came out with his theory not short after all this was happening. And the fossil record was so sparse that no definite determination could be made, obviously. And Charles Darwin speculated about how natural selection might create a whale-like creature over time. So his theory was in North America, the black bear was seen by Hearn swimming, Samuel Hearn, which was he was an explorer, I guess, swimming for several hours with his mouth wide open. Thus catching, like a whale, insects in the water, right? So
Sure.
Darwin's theory was that bears are the evolutionary product of large whales in some way.
Okay.
Actually, no, I take that back. That's what it came off as, I guess I should say. So, like, Darwin was widely ridiculed for this particular theory, I guess, which he was widely ridiculed for
A lot.
a lot of things.
Yeah. He was on to
Critics,
something.
and so his critics took it to mean that he was proposing that bears were direct ancestors of whales, which is not true. Darwin ended up modifying the passage and went with the Basiosaurus theory, right? So we're still unknown, not quite sure. Let me see. So T.H. Huxley in 1871, Darwin asked whether the ancient whale might represent a transitional form, and Huxley replied that there could be little doubt that the Basiosaurus provided clues as to the ancestry of whales. Huxley thought that the Basiosaurus at least represented the type of animal that linked whales to their terrestrial ancestors. If this was true, then it seemed probable that whales had evolved from some sort of terrestrial carnivorous mammal. Other extinct whales, another extinct whale called the Squalodon, a fossil dolphin with a wicked smile and full of triangular teeth. I think you guys all know which one that is.
Horrifying.
Similarly hinted that whales had evolved from meat-eating ancestors. So while all this was going on, scientists speculated about what the ancestors of whales might have been like. The anatomist William Henry Flower pointed out that seals and sea lions use their limbs to propel themselves through the water, while whales lost their hind limbs and swam by auscultations of their tail. He could not imagine that early cetaceans used their limbs to swim and switched to tail-only propulsion at some later point. Okay. Then they went over, like, they were like, well, otters and beavers were a better alternative for models of the earliest terrestrial ancestors of whales, but still, like, it's hard to make the connections, right? So basically, everyone's like, what do we do? We have no idea what's happening. We may conclude by picturing ourselves some primitive generalized marsh haunting animals with scanty covering of hair, like a modern hippopotamus, right? But with broad swimming tails and short limbs. Omnivorous in their mode of feeding, probably combining water plants with mussels, worms, and freshwater crustaceans, gradually becoming more and more adapted to fill the void. But by the turn of the 20th century, oldest fossil whales were still represented by the Basiosaurus and similar forms like the Diraudon and Protocetus,
Yeah, that's what I would say.
and all of which were fully aquatic. but there were no fossils to bridge the gap from land to sea, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, everyone, all the smart people in the world were like, we don't know what to do. We need more evidence. What's going to happen?
What's a whale? We don't know. They were not having a whale of a time.
No. And so for decades, from at least the 1890s onward, they were like, I don't know.
All of them just shrugged their shoulders.
Yeah. And that's science, ladies and gentlemen.
Honestly, pretty accurate. It's
pretty accurate. So in the second half, we're going to discuss this. We are going to talk about the discovery that was able to finally bridge the gap and confirm that whales were once land roving and now they are sea roving.
I would argue that is also science. Like, we're gonna figure it out. Determination is key.
It's true. So anyway, we're gonna take a little break and we'll come back in a minute. Hi, Kirsten.
Hi, Blair.
Do you have cats?
Why, yes, I do.
Then you should play mediocre content for your cats.
And why is that?
Because it has been shown to soothe cats and reduce hairballs.
Really?
Yes. In fact, I play mediocre content for my cats, too. Mediocre content is for all pets.
That's so great to know. I will play mediocre content for my cats right now.
You should. Everyone should listen to mediocre content with their pets today.
Mediocre content has not been shown to reduce hairballs or soothe any animals of any species. In fact, it's very probable to create the exact opposite effect. Please use caution while exposing your furry friends to mediocre content. It's also pretty dodgy for humans, so listen at your own risk. Mediocre content is not responsible for any negative effects of podcast listening.
Whale, welcome back.
Get out of here. Boo! Oh, so good. I love episodes like this. We could just make all the puns. We're just...
I think it's like the afternoon and we're both just like, bleh.
That's what happens, you know? Look, again, we say this a lot. If you haven't come here for mediocre content, are you even in the right place?
You're not. Spoiler alert. Okay. So I know you all have been waiting with bated breath to figure out exactly what bridged the gap and made the fossil record complete for whales. And I'm here to tell you that a startling discovery was made in the arid sands of Pakistan, announced by the University of Michigan paleontologists Philip Gingrich and Donald Russell in 1981, finally delivered the transitional form scientists had been hoping for.
The gasp they gasped.
In freshwater sediments dating back to around 53 million years ago, the researchers recovered the fossils of an animal that they called Pachytus inicus. Little more than the back of the animal's skull had been recovered, but it possessed a feature that unmistakably is connected to the cetacean family. Now, like many mammals, cetaceans have ear bones enclosed in a dome of bone on the underside of their skulls called the auditory bulla. You have one, I have one, we all have one.
Don't look at my bulla, man.
Where whales differ is that the margin of the dome closest to the midline of the skull, called the involucrum, is extremely thick, dense, and highly mineralized. This condition is called pachyosteosclerosis.
You nailed that.
Good job, me.
Good job. You nailed it.
And whales are the only mammals known to have such heavily thickened involucrum. They special like that. And of course, the discovery had this, so therefore, it is a whale or an early version of a whale.
Nice.
Even better, two jaw fragments showed that the teeth of the Pachytus were very similar to those of mesonychids. It appeared that Van Valen had been right, and which is one of the early researcher guys. And Patagus was just one of the sort of marsh-dwelling creature he had envisioned. The fact that it was found in a freshwater deposit and did not have specializations of the inner ear for underwater hearing showed that it was still in the very early in the aquatic transition. And Gingrich and Russell thought of I've said it like three times already, and it still bothers me. Pachycetus, as a quote amphibious intermediate stage in the transition of whales from land to sea. So it was basically a whale frog, is what I'm gonna go for.
Can you imagine? That thing is crazy looking in your brain.
It didn't look like a frog though, guys. So don't
ribbit. Can you hear that dog just like dog? Going ham outside?
There's a dog.
Excuse, you don't even live here. Shh. Hold on. I need to close my window.
Sir. Okay. So they added the caveat that postcranial remains, bones other than the skull, will provide the best test of this hypothesis. The scientists had every reason to be cautious, but the fact that a traditional whale had been found was so stupendous that full body reconstruction of the Pachycetus appeared in books, magazines, and on television. It was presented as a stumpy legged seal-like creature.
It's so rude.
An animal caught between worlds. Poor thing.
It was not living its best life.
No. So throughout the 1990s, the skeletons of more or less aquatically adapted ancient whales were discovered at a dizzying pace. With this new context, the stubby seal-like form of Pachycetus, depicted in so many places, began to make less and less sense. Then in 2001, J.G.M. Thwaisen and colleagues described the long-sought skeleton, as opposed to just the skull, of Pachycetus. Wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense. Never mind. It was a wolf-like animal, not the slick steel-like animal that they had originally envisioned. So the full skeleton, I guess, was not. Yeah. Took a while for them to like fully excavate, and it didn't look like they thought it looked. Together with other recently discovered genera like the Himalayas and Ambulocetus, Remingtonocetus, and a bunch of other ones that I'm not going to pronounce.
There's so many.
It fits snugly within a collection of
archaeocetes.
Basically, skeletons.
Yeah.
Of old whales.
Yeah.
That exquisitely document a evolutionary radiation of early whales.
Perfect.
Though not a series of direct ancestors and descendants, each genus represents a particular stage of whale evolution. Together they illustrate how the transition took place.
It's kind of cool to see that in other animals too, like how they acquired different attributes that set them aside from their ancestors but still allowed them to be within the same lineage,
right,
of ancestors. It's very cool.
Very cool. Yeah. But I also think it's wild to think that over time, animals were just like, yep, I'm going to be aquatic now.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, you don't have like a wolf going, yeah, I think I'd rather have gills.
Right. Like, I mean, I guess in our lifetime, we would not be able to see that transition, but it just, right, it's so wild to know that that happened.
Also, I feel like I need to state this as a previous biology student.
Yes, ma'am.
Just very briefly, because I don't like to assume anything. It is not, animals are not actively choosing these. I would just like to be very, is literally a natural selection. There are weird adaptations that occur or mutations that occur. And if you look at the history of animals, It's essentially the whole, the strongest will survive. No, that's pretty accurate. And those attributes that allowed it to survive just become ingrained in their lineage.
Right. So like ultimately what happened with the whales is like their environment became too toxic. And one whale was like, oh, well, I have this cool ability to like do something advantageous in this water climate. And then I'm going to reproduce and pass it on to my kids. That's what happened.
And sometimes it works the opposite is the thing. Yeah. Like, it's not always like an advantageous thing. But in cases like this, it just so happened by pure luck of mutation and weirdness alone that it happened. So I just want to be very clear about that.
Yeah, environmental stressors and genetics.
Indeed. Science rules.
Science. All right. And if you're in the comments talking about how evolution isn't real, you can move right on along.
I mean, feel free to comment it, but just be very clear.
We have no room for you here. I'm so sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. So now we're going to talk about the types of whales. And there are 80 types of whales. But so we're not going to talk about all 80 of them because then we'd be here for another hour and a half. And I don't want to do that.
That's fair.
So, and I'm sure neither do you. So here we are. There are two main types of whales, which are the ones that have teeth and the ones that have the little bristlies, and which are called baleen.
And no, they're called the little bristlies.
I thought that's a better term.
Science.
And if, again, I'm going to make a Finding Nemo reference because that's where I get all of my marine life information. The teeth that you see in the humpback whale that they are swallowed by, the one that Marlin is like hitting against, those are the baleen teeth. Those are not, the regular teeth are more like what you think of as teeth.
Right.
Okay. So yeah. And it's also a fact that toothed whales eat like bigger things. So like squids, fish, and like seals and stuff. Whales with the baleen usually go for smaller things like krill. Also, I just want to say up front that the narwhal horn, because we are, there is a type of whale, is a large tooth, and do with that information what you will. I think that it's super cool, and I still think it's a unicorn horn because that's what I choose to believe.
The thing you should really, we should do an episode on narwhals, or maybe like a mini something on narwhals, because they can actually really injure themselves with this thing, and it's very interesting to read about. So anyway,
I think that like ancient cultures like the Vikings chopped off the tooth and then sold it to people as a unicorn horn, and that's why people think unicorns are real. That's just my like conspiracy theory. I don't know, obviously. That's my thought.
That's a cool theory. I haven't thought about that. That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. And also the baleen teeth whales are usually bigger, right? So you got your humpback whale, your blue whale.
Ironically.
Et cetera. Yeah.
Right.
Right. Okay. So some of my favorite types of whales, we're going to start off with the beluga whale, which I think is so cute. I love the beluga whales. They are known for their white color and range of vocal sounds. They're very chatty. They are known as the, quote, canary of the sea. And they are very social animals, forming groups to hunt, migrate, and interact with each other. So they love to be around. When I was at the Georgia Aquarium, they had two or three beluga whales, one of which was on a diet because it was really fat. It had like little ripples of like fat tissue all over the place. It was so cute though.
That is super cute actually.
Yeah. And there's also that gif of that poor little child standing in front of the beluga whale. And the beluga whale scares the crap out of her. And it's so funny.
It's adorable.
Okay. I also like, and this is in no particular order, by the way.
Fair enough.
I'm an equal opportunity whale person. Okay. blue whales are the largest animals to ever live on the planet. And they eat the smallest animals on the planet, which is weird. Not mm-hmm. really the smallest animals, but like krill are very small.
Yes.
Anyway, blue whales are found in all ocean basins except for the Arctic Ocean. There are 5 currently recognized subspecies of blue whale, which I did not look up. And I'm now realizing I probably should have.
That's I got you.
Okay. Thank you so much. We have the bowhead whales, which are one of the few whale species that reside almost exclusively in the Arctic and the subarctic waters, experiencing seasonal ice coverage, primarily between 60 and 75 north latitude. So all the large whales, the bowhead is the most adapted to the icy water. And it's called the bowhead because it's like very rounded. It's not pointy like a blue whale. Mm-hmm. Their head is like super round.
Nice.
It looks cool. All right. So now we have false killer whales, not to be confused with killer whales, which are actually orcas. All right.
They're impersonators.
They are social animals found globally in all tropical and subtropical ocean basins and generally in the deep offshore waters. The false killer whale's entire body is black or dark gray. And although lighter areas may occur on its underside, between the flippers and stuff, which is probably why people are like, oh, they look like killer whales, but they're not.
Right. Also, I have the subspecies.
Yes.
All right. So the northern blue whale, mm-hmm. the Antarctic blue whale, mm-hmm. the northern Indian Ocean blue whale. That's just locational, by the way. So
I see that. Yeah.
But then there's also the pygmy blue whale and the Chilean blue whale, which, yeah. So it's all like regional. Ew. And they might just be that they have minor differences that keep them as a blue whale, but because of where they are, like we talked about, they mm-hmm. probably have specific adaptations for whatever area they're found in.
Correct. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Humpback whales.
Yeah.
Next. They're a favorite of whale watchers, can confirm. They are often active, jumping out of the water and slapping the surface with their pectoral fins or tails. We saw a mom humpback whale and a little baby.
That is so precious.
Which was actually very large, but that's neither here nor there.
Sweet little baby.
Yeah. And they do the little breach thing to get their foods.
So smart.
Yep. And now we have the killer whale, which is more accurately named the orca. This is the ocean's top predator, and I know this because I saw a video the other day of a great white shark getting absolutely demolished by an orca, and it was bad.
Wow.
It did not, the great white shark didn't even see it coming. It like postured and then it was like out.
Oh my god.
It was not good.
Oh,
I'll send it to you. It was really bad.
Please do not. Then I will decline.
It's like an aerial view, so you see the great white shark go.
And that then it like it's just minding its out. Business, man.
Yeah,
oh my god. We need to do a shark episode. Redeem them.
Oh my god, it's awful. No, orcas are the real sharks.
They are. I would agree. They are horrifying.
I did also see, when we went whale watching, I did see a family of orcas. Mm-hmm. The dad orca had a dorsal fin that was 6 feet tall.
Holy crap.
It was giant. Jacked. And there's been like sightings in the Monterey Bay this year of like 30 to 40 killer whales, like all in one big pack.
I have also heard, and this might just be the sharks stirring conspiracy theories about orcas, so I don't know, maybe check your resources, but sure. I have also heard that orcas will play with their food.
Oh, 1,000%.
And like, and like circle them, beef them up, and then all of a sudden they're like, nang, nang, nang.
These, they don't play no games.
They know what they're doing. Ridiculous.
Oh. Yeah. Anyway.
Horrifying.
They're also they're the largest member of the dolphin family.
Ironic.
So They can eat that.
Meanwhile,
not even a whale.
Dolphins are just jumping in the water, having a good time.
No. Dolphins are. Mm-mm.
Okay, we'll do a dolphin episode too.
Yeah, I know. We got to do it. Dolphins are mean. They are not nice. All right. So then we have the melon-headed whales, which I exclusively picked just because their name is funny.
I have never heard of that.
They are a robust small whale found primarily in deep tropical waters worldwide. They are social animals and often occur in groups of hundreds or thousands. And it's exactly what you think it is. Their head is like more round than the bow-headed whale.
Wow.
And they're cute.
What a melon.
They got like a nice little melon part on the front.
Isn't, aren't those like beluga whales used for their echolocation or whatever, their communication?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's all in the
brain.
Do
little like that thing.
Like yeah. Puma looking at the birds.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Pretty
accurate.
If you
have a cat, you know what I'm talking about.
She do have a dome.
All right. And then we got the narwhals, which are exclusively found in the Arctic Ocean. Generally, male narwhals have the big old tooth that sticks out of their forehead. And it's a long clockwise spiraled tusk resembling a unicorn horn. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm just putting it out there. I think back in the day, people were like, oh, this looks interesting. And they just like chopped it right off. And then they sold it. The witches like sold it to the medieval people.
Her sister was a witch.
And they're like, the unicorns are real. It's true.
They were roommates.
They were roommates.
The thing that makes me laugh, though, is like narwhal ocean. They're like, no. Horse. Like, I want to know where that transition was.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I hope it is. I hope somebody in the middle ages was like, I know how to make my life better.
Horse horn.
The plague. No. Unicorns.
Mm-mm. it's crazy.
It's not outlandish.
Humans
totally
are freaking weird.
I know.
Yeah.
Anyway, rice whales are members of the baleen whale family. So not a humpback or blue whale, but they have those like nice little teethies.
Mm-hmm.
They have fewer than 100 in population currently.
Oh, that's sad.
They are the most endangered whales in the world, which was my reasoning for including them. So save the rice whales.
Every grain.
No, you should donate. No, that doesn't make any sense. I was like, donate rice to save the world. That's not.
I don't think that's going to help.
No, it doesn't. Nope. And then finally, sperm whales. They are the largest toothed whales. So they don't have the little bristlies.
Yeah.
They have teeth, and they have one of the widest global distributions of any marine mammal. So they are everywhere.
Think Moby Dick.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Or Pinocchio, wow. Whichever you want to go with.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I forget about that. I don't think I was a big I watched Pinocchio as a kid.
But
it wasn't my favorite.
No, it kind of scared me, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, I think the whale thing was just not my vibe.
Yeah.
Weird.
Ironic.
I know. I know. I got over it, clearly.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's whales for you.
Okay. Well, I have a singular complaint about this episode.
Yes.
Not once in this entire episode did you make a blowhole joke, and I'm super disappointed that we have come the entire time without a single blowhole joke.
I thought it was kind of inappropriate, to be honest with you.
That's disgusting. I don't even know you anymore.
I didn't even think about it. It was wide open and I didn't even think about it. That's what she said.
And so, with that, we would love to know your blowhole joke. So please send them to us at mediocrecontent@gmail.com. hit us up on our Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. Leave us a comment. We'd love to see you. Love to hear from you. All the good stuff. We will feature you. I feel like we haven't said this, but we have had a little bit of mediocre mail in the past. We'll feature your comment so long as it's appropriate, unless it's about blowholes, and then that's kind of the exception.
You so just asked them to comment on blowholes, and now I did. You're like, I don't think so.
With the exception of blowhole content, make sure it's appropriate. All of that to say, please reach out to us. We will be sure to read and comment back. Also, you can connect with us live, of course. Same handle over on Twitch every other Thursday. 3 p.m. PST, 6 p.m. EST, 11 p.m. BST. Pick the time zone or make one up. Whichever one works for you. Don't forget us to rate. Don't forget to rate us 5 stars. Don't forget us to rate 5 stars either. Wherever you listen to podcasts, and we will see you next week.
This has been Mediocre Content.
Thanks so much for listening. Cheers.
Cheers.